ongoing Israeli genocide. And a UN rights expert says Israel's onslaught on Gaza amounts to genocide, calling for immediate arms embargo and sanctions against the regime. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News. Nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, and the regime's indiscriminate strikes continue claiming more civilian lives. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, at least 81 civilians were killed and 93 others injured in the past 24 hours. At least 12 civilians, including children, were killed after an Israeli air raid hit a tent full of displaced people west of the southern city of Khan Yunis. A separate strike on Rafah killed a child and wounded several others. Meanwhile, the death toll from an Israeli raid on a home sheltering displaced people in north of Rafah rose to 19, including 9 children. Regime's air raids continued on the vicinity of Al-Shifa Hospital, west of Gaza City. Death toll from Israeli ongoing genocide has now exceeded 32,400, mostly women and children, and about 75,000 others have been injured. Our correspondent, Moti Abu Musabe, says Israeli forces are stepping up attacks on Gaza, leaving behind more civilian casualties.
The Israeli occupation forces scaled up their attacks and their atrocities against the Palestinian people across all areas of Gaza Strip. This began with the fresh attack that targeted the headquarters of the Al-Zawaida municipality in the central area of Gaza Strip. At least a Palestinian civilian was reportedly killed over that attack. Previously, the Israeli warplanes also waged several relentless airstrikes against a Nusayrat refugee camp. A series of the airstrikes hit several residential buildings there, including the Al-Amal town, which includes several residential towers in the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. While in the eastern part of Al-Maghazi refugee camp, the Israeli occupation forces intensified their artillery shelling. At least 2 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over those attacks. So we are talking about continuous airstrikes and artillery shelling reaching all areas of the central area of Gaza Strip. While when it comes to Rafah City, more Israeli massacres were committed against the Palestinian civilians. Several residential buildings and areas were reportedly targeted by the Israeli warplanes. At least 22 Palestinian civilians, including women and children, were massacred over those continuous and relentless airstrikes.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has reaffirmed country's unwavering support for the issue of Palestine as well as the oppressed people of Gaza. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remark in a meeting with the head of Hamas Political Bureau, Ismail Haniyeh. The leader praised the historic steadfastness of the people of Gaza in the face of Israel's crimes and savagery, which enjoy full Western support. He said despite what the enemies intended, the issue of Palestine has now turned into a global priority. For his part, Haniyeh said Israel has failed to achieve any of its stated objectives during the past 6 months. He added the U.S. administration is the main partner to Zionist crimes and is directly leading to the regime's onslaught on Gaza. Haniyeh had earlier held a press conference with Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, where he said recent UN Security Council resolution was a sign of unprecedented isolation for the Israeli regime.
Although this resolution came late and there may be some gaps that need to be filled, the resolution itself indicates that the Israeli occupation is experiencing unprecedented political isolation.
Hamas leader said Israel is losing its political cover and protection, even in the UN Security Council. He added the U.S., which is Israel's closest ally, cannot impose its will on the international community. During his meeting with Haniyeh, Iran's foreign minister said despite its unprecedented crimes, Israel and its allies have realized they cannot achieve their goals and eliminate Hamas. He also criticized Islamic countries for their failure to mount economic pressure on Israel, which would have greatly reduced casualties and destruction in Gaza.
A brief but meaningful presence in front of the cameras. The political bureau chief of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, is in Tehran a day after the United Nations Security Council adopted a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. This is Haniyeh's second trip to Tehran since the Israeli onslaught on the besieged coastal strip on October 7th.
We are going through a historic stage in the fight against the regime, and its turning point is the Al-Aqsa flood. The people of Palestine have shown exemplary resistance, and the resolution that was passed by the UNSC indicates that the Israeli occupation is experiencing unprecedented political isolation. Israel is losing its political cover and protection, even in the Security Council.
Raise their hand.
On Monday, the United Nations Security Council passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, with the U.S. for the first time abstaining from the vote. Washington had vetoed three such resolutions before. This is the result of, quote, the exceptional resistance demonstrated by the people of Gaza, as described by Haniyeh during a meeting with Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei later in the day, where the leader emphasized that the Islamic Republic of Iran will not hesitate to support Palestine.
This visit is very important, taking into account the timing of the trip. As we can see, Mr. Haniyeh has traveled to Tehran just one day after the adoption of the UN Security Council resolution for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. This highlights the importance of Iran's role as a trustworthy and wise friend for Hamas.
Ismail Haniyeh is expected to hold more high-level meetings with Iranian officials, including President Ebrahim Raisi. This is the sixth time that the two officials are meeting since October 7th, and the second time that Ismail Haniyeh has traveled to Tehran, signaling the important role that Iran plays in the political equations of the region. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The U.S. Special Rapporteur on Occupied Palestinian Territories says Israel's brutal onslaught on Gaza amounts to genocide.
I find that there are reasonable grounds to believe that the threshold indicating the commission of the crime of genocide against Palestinians as a group in Gaza has been met. Specifically, Israel has committed three acts of genocide with the requisite intent, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, and imposing measures intended to prevent birth within the group. The genocide in Gaza is the most extreme stage of a long-standing settler colonial process of erasure of the native Palestinians.
Francesca Albanese, who was addressing the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, she urged all member states to immediately impose an arms embargo and sanctions on the regime. Albanese said Israel's crimes were the result of impunity afforded to it, saying continuation of the regime's impunity and exceptionalism, that is no longer viable. Expert also slammed certain members of the council for providing military, economic, and political support for the occupying regime. She said the number of children killed by Israel in Gaza in the past 6 months is higher than the number of children killed in all conflicts worldwide in the past 4 years. Spokesperson for the UN Children's Agency in Gaza says a dire humanitarian situation in northern Gaza has left the children there paper thin for malnourishment.
A week ago, I was in Kamal Adwan Hospital, where we've had those reports of 20-plus children dying of malnutrition and dehydration. When I was there, I saw a room full of mothers and carers, not always mothers. Some mothers have been killed. Carers shuddering over children who are paper thin, absolutely paper thin. Incubators full of babies who are born prematurely because of the stress on mothers, also malnourished. Life-saving aid is being obstructed. Lives are being lost. Dignity is being denied. The deprivation, the forced desperation, it means that every time I'm among Gazans here, you can now hear the shelling and the firing from the coast. There's a sense of despair pervading the population, and people's nerves are shattered amid unrelenting attack. People often ask me, is there still hope? Everything is at extremes here, and that question is no different. So on the one hand, a mother will speak to me and explain that She has lost loved ones. She's lost her home. She's lost her ability to regularly feed her children. She will tell me all she has left is hope. Our efforts to provide aid are being hampered. Just one example. There is, when we come in from the south, remembering you are going through hundreds of thousands of people, it's a difficult dirt journey. It's a dangerous journey. A UNICEF vehicle, once it's been loaded from our warehouse, will offload four different times before it gets to people. Now, there is an existing old crossing point that could be used in the north 10 minutes from where those people are putting their hands to their mouth, pleading for food. 10 minutes. Open that, and we could turn this humanitarian crisis around in a matter of days. But it remains closed. Remembering, imminent famine, entirely predictable, entirely preventable, man-made. If we want a glass half full, man-made, it can be reversed if the right decisions are made.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq says it's carried out new operations against Israeli targets in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. Iraq's Islamic resistance said the first operation targeted Ovda air base in occupied Palestinian territories using drones. And in the second operation, resistance drones hit Israel's Spear military site, also in occupied territories. The Iraqi resistance said the operations were carried out in response to the latest massacres of the people of Gaza by Israel. Iraq's resistance groups have conducted numerous operations against Israeli targets in recent months. They've also attacked U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in response to Washington's support for Israel's campaign of genocide. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has also carried out a series of retaliatory operations against Israeli targets amid simmering tensions with over the regime's unrelenting onslaught on Gaza. Major Israeli command center in occupied Golan Heights has been the latest target hit with over 50 missiles. We were earlier joined by our Beirut correspondent, Maddie M. Saleh, with your details.
The operation that you mentioned is perhaps the most significant development that we witnessed today. It's definitely becoming even more and more heated, although we did have a few days of somewhat routine operations from both sides and routine shelling from the Israeli side. But we saw that today became even more heated. We saw the Israelis evidently trying to escalate the situation by hitting targets or hitting areas in the heart of Lebanese territory. They're going deeper and deeper, mostly going towards the eastern side in the Bekaa area, the city of Baalbek, and even reaching areas that are further in the northeastern part, closer and to the outskirts of the Ras of Baalbek area and the Al Fakhar town, which is much further away from the town or the city of Baalbek itself. And so that was considered definitely a very dangerous development by Hezbollah. And this is why we saw that they launched some 50 rockets on the Yarden barracks. And that's in the Golan Heights, that is considered the first time that this barracks itself is targeted by Hezbollah. Hezbollah also said that this is the main headquarters and the command center for the Israeli army at a time of war. This is the description that the Israelis are giving. So this is definitely perhaps a newly situated command center for the Israeli military, but it's also significant to see that it was targeted by Hezbollah for the first time. So definitely Hezbollah seems to still have a new database that they can continue or they can use whenever they need to.
Syria strongly condemned a recent act of aggression by U.S. occupation forces, which targeted several areas in the country's eastern province of Deir ez-Zor, causing casualties. Syria's foreign ministry said U.S. considers itself the world's policeman under pretext to violate international law and international humanitarian law. It stressed Washington must end its illegitimate presence on Syrian soil and its open support for terrorists like Daesh. Calling for global action to counter U.S. acts of aggression in West Asia, Syria vowed to bring the aggressors to justice in line with international law. A Syrian military source said the U.S. strikes hit a number of towns, villages, and military sites. They killed 7 soldiers and 1 civilian and injured 19 soldiers and 13 civilians. Strikes also caused huge material damage to public and private property. A British court has handed a temporary reprieve to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange in his fight against extradition to the U.S. Two judges have ruled Assange could take his case to an appeals hearing if the U.S. government fails to provide the court with suitable assurances. Saipuruza reports.
To Julian Assange's supporters, legal team, and family, another disappointment in the UK's justice system.
Now the UK courts have invited the United States to issue assurances. The Biden administration should not issue assurances. They should drop this shameful case that should never have been brought. Julian should never have been imprisoned for a single day. This is a shame on every democracy.
Based on the new judgment, in 3 weeks, the U.S. should give assurances that Assange will not face the death penalty in the U.S. before judges consider dismissing the WikiLeaks founder's bid to bring an extradition appeal. It all comes despite revelations in 2021 that senior CIA officials during the Trump administration had discussed abducting and even assassinating Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy, where he had sought asylum for 7 years. It is for publishing images and nearly 500,000 other classified documents relating to the U.S.-led wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that the American government wants Assange extradited. His supporters say they fear he will be jailed for life. To Julian Assange's supporters, this is not just about the extradition of one man, but also about the profound consequences that will have for press freedom here and around the world. A fact highlighted by those who have campaigned for years to secure Assange's freedom.
The message that Julian Assange's extradition case will send around the world is that a United States Department of Justice can reach out anywhere in the world, whether you're a British citizen, whether you're an Australian citizen, wherever you're from, and claim that you're a spy and that you have revealed classified information as though you were a spy.
The latest ruling means the legal saga, which has dragged on for more than a decade, will continue, and Assange will remain inside London's high-security Belmarsh prison, where he has spent the last 5 years. Saeed Purizap, London.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Joe Biden sears his name in history by becoming the first sitting American president to be sued for complicity in genocide over the United States' abetment in the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The New Yorker magazine has covered this story and tells us more. As it continues to devour Palestinian lives in the Gaza Strip, U.S. President Joe Biden has urged the Israeli war machine to be given more time. Biden said in an interview, "I think they have to give this just a little bit of time." The comments came as the Palestinian death toll from an October 7th to present-day genocidal war by the Israeli regime crossed 30,500 mark. The Israeli regime launched its devastating war following the Al-Aqsa storm operation, a surprise operation by Gaza's resistance groups, including Hamas, against the occupied Palestinian territories that was staged in response to intensification of Tel Aviv's decades-long campaign of occupation and aggression against Palestinians. Apparently trying to justify Tel Aviv's resolve to keep up the military onslaught, Joe Biden said, "The pressure on the Israeli leadership to move with every ounce of capacity against Hamas is real. Israel has vowed not to stop the aggression until the realization of its declared goals, including destruction of Hamas, which many dismiss as unattainable." Meanwhile, the U.S. president alleged, "I think you're going to see, I'm praying you're going to see, a significant downturn in the use of force." On 26th of January this year, the International Court of Justice, the United Nations' top court, ordered the Israeli regime to take all measures within its power to prevent genocide in Gaza. However, the Israeli regime has significantly ramped up its strikes across the coastal sliver ever since. It is also about to go ahead with a ground offensive against the southern Gaza city of Rafah, which has come to host more than 1.5 million of the territory's 2.4 million strong population who have fled the ravages of the war. Joe Biden claimed, "I don't want to see any Palestinians killed. I think that it's contrary to what we believe as Americans." As part of its consistent political patronage of the Israeli regime, the United States, which is Tel Aviv's main benefactor, has so far vetoed 3 United Nations Security Council resolutions that have called for implementation of an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The Israeli aggression also enjoys unreserved military and intelligence support on the part of Washington. Last month, more than 100,000 people voted uncommitted in Michigan's Democratic primary in an attempt to push Joe Biden on the issue. The group Listen to Michigan, which spearheaded the movement in less than a month with very little financial resources, tweeted, "Our movement emerged victorious tonight and massively surpassed our expectations." Tens of thousands of Michigan Democrats, many of whom who voted for Biden in 2020, are uncommitted to his re-election due to the war in Gaza, adding, "President Biden has funded the bombs falling on the family members of people who live right here in Michigan. People who voted for him, who now feel completely betrayed. President Biden, listen to Michigan. Count us out, Joe." Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says history will not erase the Biden administration's disgraceful complicity in the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war against the Gaza Strip. Hamas's political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh made the remark recently following a meeting with Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. Ismail Haniyeh said the United States was providing a cover for the Israeli regime's war of starvation against Gaza. He was apparently referring to American officials lamenting the situation in Gaza at the same time that Washington retained its unbridled support for the war. Ismail Haniyeh said the American cover for the crime of starvation that the occupation uses as a weapon to achieve political goals is a disgrace to humanity that history will not erase, even if the American administration hides behind misleading statements about the humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip. The Hamas leader added, it will not absolve the United States of its responsibility and participation in war crimes committed against defenseless civilians in Gaza. Ismail Haniyeh also denounced what he called the Israeli regime's refusal to provide decisive responses to mediators' efforts to broker a ceasefire. He said Hamas responded to the efforts of the mediator brothers, agreed to the course of negotiations on stopping the aggression, and showed great seriousness and flexibility. But it believes that the Israeli regime is stalling, which the movement Hamas will not accept in any way. British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story and tells us more. Joe Biden sears his name in history by becoming the first sitting American president to be sued for complicity in genocide over the United States' abetment in the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza. The first hearing in the case was being held at the federal courthouse in Oakland, California recently. Human rights bodies and Palestinian U.S. citizens are plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which was lodged by the Center for Constitutional Rights, a New York-based legal advocacy organization, in mid-February. The Center for Constitutional Rights filed the lawsuit on behalf of Dr. Omar al-Najjar, a physician at Nasser Medical Complex in the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza Strip, as well as Palestinian human rights groups, Defense for Children International, Palestine, and Al-Haq. The lawsuit also names U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and the Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The United States has been providing this. It has armed the regime with more than 10,000 tons of military hardware and blocked ratification of all United Nations Security Council resolutions that have called for cessation of Israeli aggression in Gaza. The lawsuit states, if the legal responsibility to prevent an unfolding genocide is to mean anything, indeed, if the rule of law is to signify anything, courts must have a role and responsibility to enforce these foundational international law principles, adding, the lives of so many more people are at stake. Sadaf Doust, a Birth Justice Fellow with the Center for Constitutional Rights, told The Independent, I'm certainly not aware of another sitting U.S. president who has had charges of complicity in genocide brought against him in a federal court of law, or against his senior cabinet members, a testament in and of itself to the gravity of the U.S.'s significant role in this genocide, the crime of crimes. Sadaf Doust noted a court hearing in the case would force the Biden administration to confront what it has gone to great lengths to deny or even recognize, and through a public, permanent record.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum to dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Sadiq and Brother Ali. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa
rahmatullah.
Very welcome to the show, Viewpoints. So regarding the speeches of the leader of Iran on the concept of human being, and the we can say the most important speeches that the rahbar gave on the role that the human being might have in today's world, there have been a series of discussions and we try to get into the different dimensions and angles of the life of the human beings. For today's discussion, we want to talk about human rights. And first of all, we have to define the rights. I mean, what are the rights for a human being? Let's start with whom, Sheikh Sadiq or Brother Ali? Sheikh Sadiq, let's start with you. What are these rights that the human is looking for?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I think a more appropriate place to start is the position of human.
Okay.
In both a materialistic or, let's say, Western worldview and a Tawhidi one. In a materialistic worldview, human is the center of the world. And being the center of the world, being the highest creature, means having all the privileges. You can do whatever you want because you're human. You can slaughter animals. You can use and abuse the environment. You can do whatever you want because you're human. You're the God. But in an Islamic worldview, in a Tawhidi worldview, human is still the highest creation, is the best of a creation. But it doesn't mean just having all the privileges. It's having the highest privileges, but also the highest responsibilities.
That's right.
So because human is Khalifa of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on earth, we have the privilege of using animals for our own uses, but we're also responsible towards animals, towards other humans, towards the environment. We're responsible towards the creation. So that's the position of human. And that is what gives rise to the difference of human rights in Islam and in a materialistic worldview.
That's all right. So, Brother Ali, what about you?
Bismillah.
I mean, human rights. I mean, the rights and the human beings. What's your definition?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his immaculate progeny. Look, when we are talking about human rights, we need to actually first look at these two terms, human and rights. Which humans are we talking about? And what rights are we going to actually give and dedicate to these humans? As the brother said rightly, the humans in our worldview actually is different with the human in humanistic or, let's say, materialistic worldview. The human that we actually know has both sides of, let's say, material and spiritual aspects. So we believe in a human who favors two different sides which simultaneously actually act together and make one human.
That's right.
So we are going to talk about the rights of this person.
Okay.
So what kind of rights are we talking about? The rights that he has in his society, his freedom, the kind of rights that he has in his own life with his own self and with the others, and the and his rights with his creator and the rights with his environment that he is living in. Look, in an Islamic worldview, actually the basis of human rights in Islam rounds around the respect of self-esteem of human. In the sense that all the humans, all the men, are equal in their rights. All the men, I mean men and women, are equal in their rights. And no one has priority over the other. No white has priority over a black. And no, for example, Ajam has a priority over Arab or vice versa. So the priority of people actually is only on taqwa, piety.
Yes.
So this definition actually tells us where we are standing now. So we respect humans in general. This is a first, let's say, basis for that. And second, if there is going to be a priority, the priority is with those who are more pious. That's why we have some role models who are actually the most pious people in the world, like the
infallibles, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and his successors, the Imams.
So the piety must be defined here too.
Piety
and being pious, what does it mean?
Piety or taqwa means actually fearing from God, from whatever Allah actually prescribed for us. Actually, we dedicate to whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala asks us to do and refrain from whatever He actually refrained us to do. So to resort to whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants it, and to actually to distant and to refrain from whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala avoided us to do. So this kind of fear actually brings a sort of immunity for the society. In this sense, in this actually meaning, when all the people are equal, if a right of a person is neglected and violated, so it's the duty of others to help him. كُنُوا لِلظَّالِمِ خَصْمًا وَلِلْمَظْلُومِ عَوْنًا. It's the duty of all to support the one whose right is violated, and to wherever or whenever he is or she is. So it's our duty to support those rights who are violated, and to stand in front of those who are oppressors or aggressors. So this concept actually is something very general to know about what the human rights in Islam is.
Okay.
So in case, let's actually connect it to our society today. If in an Islamic society, like the society that we are in Islamic Republic of Iran, even in our constitution, we mention this, that it's our duty to support all the oppressed of the world. It actually stems from here. So people have equal rights, and if a person's right is violated, so it's the duty of others to help.
Okay, but the problem nowadays is that we have many constitutions all across the world, in all of which they are looking for the rights of the human beings here and there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays, the Western world is looking for the human rights in the Eastern one.
Look,
the Eastern one has its own prescriptions.
I think with the definition that I have presented, we can easily reach to this conclusion that the kind of, let's say, definition that they give to the human rights is easily criticized. Why? When you do not, when you ignore the rights of the black, when you ignore the rights of others except the Westerners.
This is so.
When people are being massacred in different parts of the world and you are silent, it means that no human right is looked at. So what kind of, let's say, belief or what kind of definition are you giving to this term?
Mm-hmm.
So human right is human right to the extent that actually goes to their own definition of or to their own benefits, let's say. When it goes with their own benefits, that's human rights. If you see that, for example, plenty of people being already massacred in Canada, let's say.
Yes, the children.
The children. And you are silent, and the center of human rights is still built and actually supported in Canada. It means that this human right is something ridiculous to be talked about.
And this has been done by the church, and this is the sad news. You know, that the religious class of the society of Canada nowadays are condemned for the actions of the past generations, here and there they are doing apologies, that sorry for this, sorry for that. Sheikh Sadiq, again, this is the question. Okay, respecting for the human beings in general and being after the rights of the oppressed ones, okay? So I think in a previous program you said that 1% are ruling over the world and 99% are looked as the instruments. So it seems the play is very much difficult, brother. So how can this 1% look for the true rights of the human beings in the world except getting to an absolute source of power, which is the absolute power of the Creator, of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? I think in this play of this world, that 1% might not be successful unless doing that. Is it so?
Yeah. The human rights that is talked about in the West is actually the bare minimum, mm-hmm. right? It's just there to avoid the inhumane activities that happen, like the war crimes and stuff like that, like the right to go to trial before being executed. Like that's the level of rights that we're talking about. The right to not be killed.
Yes.
These are the rights that we're talking about.
Okay.
And even this bare minimum is not practiced because of the hypocrisy that you talked about, and it's there. And they're basically giving the illusion of human rights, the illusion of having rights, the illusion of freedom and everything else to people just to keep them silent.
That's right.
And on the contrary, when you look at, for example, Risalatul Huquq by Imam Sajjad, it's not talking about the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. Like you have the right of your father. The things that if you talk about in the West, it's like you're doing your father a favor. It's not his right. But in Islam, that's his right. That's your mother's right.
Yes.
And even your body parts, like this is the right of your hand.
Oh,
this is the right of your feet.
Very good.
Even not even animals or environment or objects, even actions have rights. This is the right of your prayer. This is the right of your fast.
That's right.
This is the right of Hajj. This is the right of Zakat. Everything has rights.
Okay.
And like we're talking about a much, much higher standard when we talk about rights.
Yeah, and the look is really beautiful, you know, just dating back into more than 1,000 years ago, but it still could be available. And I think that we, I don't know, I don't want to judge again the Western system, but...
Oh, please do.
because
be my guest,
you know. But the case is that these rights that we are talking about nowadays, I think, is very much simplistic and
Hippocratic.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Hippocratic,
because
that's right.
They've been doing like slavery.
Yeah,
until
man, so many years.
Yeah, until very recently.
Yeah, 1950.
Or
man.
Women's rights, whatever you look at.
Yeah,
they've been violating all these rights.
Yes.
They've been doing all these crimes.
Yes.
And now they're criticizing other parts of the world.
Still doing.
And they're trying to overcompensate for everything.
Overcompensating, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So we see this hypocrisy everywhere. And they don't even catch up to their claims.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Sadiq and Brother Ali, for your presence in the program.
Pleasure.
Viewpoints.
Thanks to you, brother.
Beautiful discussion on the concept of human rights as tackled by the leader of Iran, by the leader of the Islamic Ummah, Sayyid Ali Khamenei. It was very kind of you. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to us. Visit our website at parstoday.com/EN. You can download for free our previous episodes on this program too. Also visit our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Thirty ayahs, 30 days. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Noble Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors, peace be upon them. Every faithful person, too, according to the extent that they had learnt from the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, embarked on this heavy duty. So the ulama, or Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job until present day. Today, this duty has become even more important because of a broad assault by the enemies against Islamic beliefs and humanity. In the 15th episode of our Ramadan special series, we're going to dwell upon the topic of victory of truth and defeat of falsehood, with a focus on Ayah 81 of Surah Al-Asra of the Holy Quran. Please stay with us. You may have heard that the Prophet of Islam said in part of his sermon on the virtues of the blessed month of Ramadan, "Devils are in chains in this month, so appeal to your Lord not to make them dominate over you." Devils are handcuffed and chained in this month to allow the servants of Allah to gain more of his banquet, to let them to recite Allah's book with contemplation. Devils are chained so that the Muslims pay more attention to their brothers in faith and all downtrodden oppressed people all over the world. Being in chain will weaken devils and their chief, Satan, in deceiving servants. Allah mentions a general law in Ayah 81 of Surah Al-Asra in the Holy Quran whilst addressing the Prophet. "And say, the truth has come, and falsehood is bound to vanish." Principally, falsehood is perishable by nature. Falsehood may show off as powerful for a while, but ultimately it won't stay, as victory is with the truth and its followers. This ayah speaks of a general principle and a definite divine tradition. Truth is the ultimate victor of all confrontations with falsehood. Falsehood may have an outward power and glory, but it is short-lived, and it will certainly perish. The reason for this is that falsehood is not in compliance and harmony with the laws and regulations of the universe. Falsehood is opposed to the laws of creation. it is fake and fabricated. But the truth is in the full compliance with the laws and regulations of creation. It is a matter of regret that every Muslim does not believe in this reality. However, falsehood dominating the world today is not everlasting, and it will soon perish, inshallah, God willing. Many people do not believe that the domineering system is bound to perish is because the main symbol of the system, the United States, keeps manifesting itself as powerful, indomitable, and everlasting through propaganda and through media campaigns and enthralling the minds and hearts of the public. This is being done through the media, especially cinema and news agencies. Yet, a brief look at history and the current circumstances make it quite clear that this system is in decline. Britain was a country whose colonialism expanded from east to the west after the Industrial Revolution. This country ruled a vast empire in history, dominating a fifth of the world's population. It was said that the sun would never set on the British Empire. Britain had almost all commercial routes in its control. It had an invincible army and the largest navy in the world. Thus, no crime and massacring would occur anywhere in the world without some sort of British involvement. For instance, in the years 1917 to 1919, half of the Iranian population were killed with an artificial famine and imposed disease, especially cholera, which were the conspiracies of the British Kingdom in Iran. India had perhaps suffered more than any other country at the hands of the British colonialists. The British committed every sort of crime and massacre in the Indian subcontinent and pillaged that country for a century and a half. Amritsar tragedy was just one of these crimes. The British massacred 60,000 freedom-seeking peaceful Indians in a place called Jallianwala Bagh on 13th of April 1919 in the province of Punjab in northwest India. British forces fired and massacred all these innocent Indians in cold blood. However, the heinous crime led to the end of the British Empire. For sure, Britain today is no longer a powerful country and it is currently grappling with innumerable economic problems, political and social crises. This has gone to the extent that even tiny countries, which used to be British colonies, have announced their independence from Britain. So not only the sun has set on the British Empire, but the empire itself is in decline. The United States of America, a country which turned into a superpower after the Second World War and built up NATO with the collaboration of its allies, has waged innumerable wars and committed unprecedented crimes across the world. The United States, which the founder of the Islamic Republic, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, fittingly named as the Great Satan, started the huge expedition in West Asia with the spurious scenario of 11th of September 2001, the scenario which was an inside job, according to many researchers, evidence and confessions of many politicians and experts. At that time, many pundits predicted a very dark and bleak era for the region, in which the United States would become more powerful and mightier through looting of the natural resources of the West Asia region. But the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, maintained another point of view on regional developments. The Secretary General of the Lebanese Islamic Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, said about this differing viewpoint, "The U.S. started expedition in the region in a way that other countries were assured that the region had entered the American age, and regional nations should witness the dominance and rule of the United States in the Middle East. They were even getting prepared for one or two countries of the U.S. rule in the region and new wars like the Crusades. At that time, I took a trip to Iran and went to visit Ayatollah Khamenei to ask for his view on regional events and U.S. entering the Middle East. At that time, the conditions were so critical that some Iranian officials came to him and consulted him on establishing relations with the United States, saying, we should seek compromise and reconciliation with the United States. Due to his strategic viewpoint, Ayatollah Khamenei would reject these requests and stress that the circumstances were not to the benefit of the Americans. Don't worry, the United States has reached its climax, and from now on, we should expect the fall and decline of this country, particularly failure in its designs in this region. Today, God's promise of the defeat of falsehood is visible more than ever before in many nations, even in Europe, and they're seeking to separate themselves from declining U.S. power. For example, the European Union has tried since 2013 to attain independence from the United States, and this has expanded to the political and economic realms as well. The President of France, Emmanuel Macron, in March of 2024 said the European Union should stop hanging on to the US, since the big threat for Europe is to be trapped in crises that are not ours.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Thank you.
Israeli forces killed scores of Palestinian civilians in new massacres in Gaza as a death toll from the regime genocide tops 32,400. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution reaffirms Islamic Republic's unwavering support for Palestine and the people of Gaza amid ongoing Israeli genocide.